This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we are slated to hear from John Bel Edwards, state representative from Amite. He heads the House Democratic Caucus and is the leader of the loyal opposition. He's had much to digest and talk about since the session ended. In fact, John Bel Edwards is calling for a veto session. We'll talk with him about next week's deadline and whether there is any real chance of this happening. And of course, last time he was on the show with yours truly, John Bel Edwards announced that he will be a candidate for governor in 2015, just two short years away. And we'll talk with him about his electoral pursuits. Also, Marcia Godet and Barry Ancelet, their book Second Line Rescue, about heroic efforts amid the chaos of Katrina and Rita. All this, now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. We're joined now by Marcia Godet and Barry Ancelet. They have put together a book called Improvised Responses to Katrina and Rita. It's a different look at the two killer hurricanes that swept through Louisiana in 2005. There have been many books over the last 8 years about what went wrong during and after those hurricanes, and this book is different. It has a focus that largely focuses upon what went right. Good morning, Barry and Marcia.
Morning.
Good morning, Jim.
Well, Marcia, what did go right during Katrina and Rita?
Well, what our focus is really on the unofficial response to the hurricanes. That is, we've heard so much about how ineffective the official response was, especially the government's response. But while that was going on, there were also those people both from outside the New Orleans area who mustered their resources and actually came in to help rescue people. But also there were people right in New Orleans who were rescuing each other and themselves. And we tried to focus on those stories.
Now, Barry, you've been involved in benefits to help those who were afflicted by these hurricanes. What are some of your good stories about how people acted heroically and altruistically during these catastrophes?
Well, one of the things that we tried to do in this in this book is to represent, give voice to the stories that we kept hearing after those events. And Marcia and I and Carl Lindahl, our third editor, are all folklorists, and what we do is listen to stories. And the stories that we were hearing were consistently remarkably different from the stories that we were hearing through the media and other official sources. And these were from people who were, you know, who had gone into the water in boats and sometimes, you know, up to their necks in water. And we were hearing firsthand stories about tricking their way in and managing to accomplish some pretty remarkable things, almost in spite of the system that was going on, that was paralyzed around them. And, you know, some of the stories are absolutely amazing. But I think it's important to remember that the kinds of stories that we were hearing were all representing people who were grateful and appreciative and cooperative about, you know, about what was going on. The events, of course, were terrible, but these people who were being rescued were not shooting at their rescuers. They were very happy to see them. And some of the stories that we were hearing were actually pretty heroic, though the people who were telling us would never have referred to themselves as heroic.
The book is Second Line Rescue from University of Press of Mississippi, Improvised Responses to Katrina and Rita. And it starts with Ernest Gaines' beautiful piece, Where Have You Gone, New Orleans? That's the preface of the book. Marcia, that's a good way to start it.
Yes, I thought it was, because I think it gives, not so much he doesn't talk about the rescues, but of course he and his wife Diane were rescuers themselves. They didn't go into New Orleans, but they had people from New Orleans, mainly relatives, who came and stayed at their house for several weeks. In fact, I think they had 14 people, and that was a story that I think almost everyone in Louisiana had. That is, if you knew anyone from New Orleans, and especially if you didn't even know someone, people had survivors from New Orleans staying with them. And, of course, Ernest Gaines also gives this beautiful picture of his impression of New Orleans. And, you know, and I think that's one of the things that struck us so strongly from especially the national media, that they were portraying New Orleans people as not only desperate, that is, they were hungry and they were in a very precarious situation, but they were also portraying them as dangerous. And you know, that was astounding that, yeah, like all large cities, there's a dangerous element, but that was not the picture of the majority of the people in New Orleans who needed to be rescued.
Barry, what have we learned in those 8 years about ourselves and how we were affected by Katrina and Rita?
One of the things we learned was that sometimes we have to improvise our own responses, that it's not always a good idea to depend on the official sources, though we ought to be able to. We ought to be able to. But I think we were reminded of the power of improvisation. One of the things that struck me about all these stories was that they were all jazz. It was all improv. The sheet music was all flooded. And those people who were used to thinking outside the box, who were used to improvising their own solutions in all walks of life, were the ones who dealt best with these situations. One of the reasons why we titled the book Second Line Rescue is, you know, Second Line is an improvised parade in the street. And this was basically an improvised parade in flooded streets that helped to solve so many of these problems.
Will we be better prepared if something like this happens again, God forbid?
Well, only in that we, God forbid, only in that we, I think we were reminded of our own vernacular power. It did happen again, if you remember, right after Katrina, a few weeks later, Rita hit. And I think with the very freshly learned lessons, of course, it was a different context as well, admittedly, but with the, you know, the very freshly learned lessons from New Orleans, the Rita response was remarmably different. And I hope nothing like that ever happens to New Orleans again, of course.
Yeah, and I think it's important too that in Rita, even though the flooding in the area was catastrophic, there were no lives lost because people did evacuate. But the other thing is that many people were rescued, but they were rescued by other citizens, by other people who simply went in with their boats to get people out.
And in the case of Rita, that was apparently easier to accomplish. In the case of Katrina, it seemed to be, judging from the stories we all heard, it seemed to be harder to do. And the triumph of those events and those stories is the extent to which some of those vernacular rescuers, those improvised rescuers, succeeded in doing what they did in spite of the system.
We're visiting with Marcia Godet and Barry Ancelet, who, along with Carl Lindahl, have put together something called Second Line Rescue, Improvised Responses to Katrina and Rita, 8 years after those hurricanes like no others came our way and changed our state and our people forevermore. What are some of the most heroic stories? Is there one in particular you could point out, Barry?
Again, the stories that we that impressed me that I was getting were from people who were in the moment. Robert LeBlanc, a young man from Houma, went into New Orleans with a friend from the old bridge side and ended up having to trick his way past the perimeter, but went in and rescued a number of people. And he wrote an email in the moment describing what he did and what they did and what they encountered and what the response was. My own son, if I can take a moment to take pride in my own son Francois, was a first-year medical student who evacuated New Orleans and then went back in, hitched up our boat and went back in, and he and some people that he was with rescued some hundreds of people and again had to trick their way in. And some of the stories were really remarkable. One of the institutions that succeeded in improvising responses was Acadian Ambulance. There were some amazing stories. They were trying to evacuate patients who had been stranded in LSU and Tulane Medical Centers, which were right next to each other. And the situation they were faced with was that they couldn't drive buses or trucks in because it was flooded. Boats were going to be way too slow. They needed really to have some helicopters come in, but there was no place for them to land. All the land was flooded. And one person looked up and said, well, you know, the top of that parking garage would be a great landing spot if it weren't for those light poles. Mm. And somebody else said, no problem. Mm. And next thing you heard was bzzz, and the light poles came down. And now you had a helipad. Now, you know, in a way you're dealing with destruction of property, but in another way you're dealing with saving lives in the most efficient way possible in the moment. And this is sort of characteristic of a lot of the stories that we heard, that people were thinking outside the box and improvising solutions in the moment.
Marcia, do you have any special story that you'd like to share?
I think one of the things that we see in almost every story in the book, especially by the rescue, is who went in, how grateful the people were who were being rescued. And not one of them, including Acadian Ambulance, you know, saw anyone, no one shot at the hurricanes. And we were getting at the helicopters, but they didn't see these people as dangerous at all. What we saw was, for example, one person asked the people coming to him in a boat, because they were not official, they did not have uniforms on, and they said, who are you? And the people in the boat said, we're volunteers, you know, we've come to rescue if you want to come with us. And, you know, one person just said, you know, thank you, Jesus, for sending someone to rescue us. And they were very, very appreciative and kept expressing that over and over again. Because some of them had been there, you know, at that point for over 24 hours, no food and water, and they saw someone come in to rescue them.
And, you know, the thing that struck us was, if we had heard this from one source, you know, it would have been, okay, that was somebody's coincidental experience. But this was with absolute consistency from all the people that we talked to. Everybody we heard from who was actually in the water or on the water had basically the same story to tell. It was pretty remarkable. And then in the second half of the book, Carl Lindahl over at the University of Houston, they found themselves with thousands and thousands and thousands of people who had been relocated there. And he figured that one good way to involve them in their own healing process was to have them interview each other and listen to each other's stories and record them. And he chose a few of those stories to include in the second half of the book. And there you're hearing, from firsthand experience and what that was like. You know, the people in New Orleans were sometimes characterized as helpless. Well, they weren't all helpless at all. They were helping each other.
Well, thank you for sharing the story of Second Line Rescue, the book from Barry Ancelet, Marcia Godet, and Carl Lindahl, Improvised Responses to Katrina and Rita from the University Press of Mississippi. Thanks, Barry and Marcia.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Take care. And today is the 5th day of July. Hope everybody had a good 4th of July holiday. Kevin Gallagher says the most famous guest born on this date, who's been a guest on this show, is Mark Cohn, the singer. Born this date in 1959 in Cleveland, Ohio, he's 54 years old. He survived a shooting in 2005 after a concert in Denver, an attempted carjacking, was shot in the head, and came away relatively unscathed. Mark Cohn.
I'm walking in Memphis, walking with my feet 10 feet off a beam. Walking in Memphis, but do I really feel the way I feel?
Mark Cohn is married to Elizabeth Vargas, the ABC News anchor, and he is quite a performer. Hopefully we'll have him back. We'll be back after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633, or 877-217-5757. Our guest is State Representative John Bell Edwards. He heads the Democratic Caucus in the Louisiana House, graduate of the U.S. Army Academy, the Military Academy in West Point, 1988, lawyer, and a man who is a major player in the Louisiana House and also is vying to become the governor of Louisiana. The election is a couple of years away. You're also calling Representative Edwards for a veto session. This seems like a daunting task, but what does it look like out there?
Well, it certainly it's somewhat of a long shot. History tells you that because it's never happened. But I think it's important if we're going to be an equal and independent branch of government that we exercise the authority we have, at least on occasion, to call ourselves into a veto override session. And I think it's particularly important this year with the line item vetoes to the appropriations bill that removed $6 million of funding for programs that benefit the disabled across the state of Louisiana, as well as a few of the other vetoes that the governor issued. And, of course, I'm trying to convince my colleagues in the House and in the Senate that we need to go into an override session. And we have until July the 11th to make our mind up on that. And I'm hopeful, but I understand it's probably a long shot.
Well, a majority of the members of either chamber must return the forms they received to prevent a veto override session from automatically occurring, and this has never happened. Obviously, it's something that it would seem to be extremely hard to do with a Republican majority in both the House and Senate and a Republican governor.
Well, that's right, and I think what typically happens is you just work where the numbers are the easiest to get, and typically, they would work the Senate the hardest to make sure that 20 senators submit their ballots saying that there is not a reason to go into a veto override session. So, your point is well taken, but I still think it's important that we do this, because we need to say that we stand behind the budget that we passed. You know, it was the legislative committees that met for hours and hours and hours with various interest groups from around the state to include those who advocate on behalf of the disabled. And the need for the additional now waivers is very obvious to us, and it's a worthwhile investment in our people in Louisiana. And quite frankly, I don't know why in the world that veto was necessary. There's enough money in the budget to cover the $6 million for the disabled programs that the governor vetoed. So I think we ought to just go in and say, look, we were serious when we passed the budget the first time, and we're going to stand behind it.
Now, the governor responded to all this by writing letters to the editor of several newspapers, and, of course, newspapers generally print something when the governor sends it to them. He says, I signed House Bill 1, Louisiana's budget bill for the next fiscal year. Despite reports to the contrary, the final budget that was signed into law does not include any cuts for people with developmental disabilities who are currently receiving waiver services. Is that accurate?
Well, I think he's playing a word game there. He cut $6 million that was put into the budget by the legislature that would go to programs that benefit those with disabilities, including $4 million to fund 200 now waivers. There is a waiting list of some 8,000 people. It takes 8 to 10 years to navigate through that waiting list. And if we don't fund additional now waivers, then those disabled people are not going to be able to receive the care that they need in their homes. And so, to say that he didn't cut funding for the disabled, he cut $6 million worth of funding for the disabled. I think what he was trying to say is for those people currently receiving services, he didn't cut them. Well, that's obviously true with the waivers. If they don't have one now, they're not going to get one. But there were other services that he did cut that actually benefit people who are waiting for a waiver. And I've had numerous discussions with folks in the various groups that advocate for the disabled to tell me they don't believe that the governor's statement was exactly accurate and truthful.
You also wrote a letter to the editor. It appeared in the Baton Rouge Advocate right below the governor's letter on June 26, a few days ago. It starts this way from Representative John Bell Edwards. Does Bobby Jindal really believe that most people in Louisiana hold religious faith and traditional marriage in contempt, that they love pornography and hate rich people, that they are deadbeats with no morals? Those are just a few of the colorful descriptions he used in a recent column to describe the almost three-quarters of Louisiana voters who don't belong to the Republican Party. But what is most troubling about Bobby Jindal's views is that they appeal to the lowest of human instincts, fear, anger, and resentment. Is that hyperbole on your part, or do you think the governor went overboard in his screed in Politico?
Yeah, no, that's not hyperbole on my part. When the governor sent his letter to Politico, I mean, that's what he said. He said, if you're not a Republican, then you must hate rich people. You're deadbeats. You don't like traditional marriage and so forth and so on. And if you just look at the numbers in Louisiana, when you know, you've got almost three-quarters of the people are not Republican. And it's just an effort on his part to divide. And I just don't think that serves us well. And also, you know, you can only contrast what he did most recently in that letter to Politico with what he said right after the election was over, and that was that his party needed to reach out to 100% of the people of America in order to build a winning coalition. Well, I mean, it's kind of a schizophrenic approach that he's taken to that issue, and it really it just struck a nerve with me that our governor is going to write a letter like that and put it in the national press, and I thought it deserved some sort of a response, because we ought to be trying to govern everybody and trying to find consensus and compromise, and we should understand that everybody in Louisiana loves this state and loves our country. And move forward together, and not just pit one against the other and attribute the worst possible motives and thoughts and so forth to people with whom we sometimes disagree.
297-5633 for State Representative John Bell Edwards, Chairman of the House Democratic Caucus. He is from the wonderful hamlet of Amite, Louisiana. Now, the governor also said that Republicans needed to put on their big boy pants and stop the bedwetting and kick around the other guys. That seems to be a bit of a pugnacious approach from our governor.
Well, it is, and I can only surmise that what he was saying there applies to on the national scene, because, as you know, the Republicans control the governorship here and have majorities in both the House and the Senate at the state legislature. So I have to assume that was meant for the national audience, and trying to get him some attention with folks who I think have started looking past Bobby Jindal.
Okay.
As they figure out what the future of the party is in this country.
All right. I think Kevin's queuing up Foster Campbell, who was on the show a few days ago and didn't take well to the essay to Politico from Governor Jindal. It seems as though that may have backfired a bit. I don't know of anybody who's really praised him for his words, and there are those who say that he didn't really write that. Do you think he wrote it?
Well, I think he allowed it to be sent over his signature, so I'm not sure what the difference is. He certainly hasn't come out and repudiated and said, that wasn't my letter, those weren't my thoughts, those weren't my words. So I have to assume that he's responsible for them.
All right. I would tend to think they are his words. Probably a seasoned speechwriter would not have written that kind of an essay. But here's how your fellow Democrat, Foster Campbell, public service commissioner, responded to the
Some of this stuff is just silly to talk about. Quit bedwetting and put on your big boy pants. I mean, you know, here's a little guy that he's the last person in the world ought to talk about big boy pants.
Representative Edwards, what do you think?
Well, I know Foster. He's a friend of mine. He is not one to mince his words or bite his tongue. And I don't disagree with him. I think our governor is the last one that should talk about those sorts of things. He ought to be governing Louisiana. He ought to be worried about the disabled here who are going to have to wait longer in order to get a now waiver and not be out around the country with his multiple trips out of state and worrying about the national audience. And so I think in that respect, Mr. Campbell is right.
877-217-5757, wherever you are, for State Representative John Bell Edwards, Democrat from Amede and chairman of the House Democratic Caucus, and we will go to the phone lines in just a moment. How's the campaign for governor going?
Well, it's going well. I'm encouraged. I'm optimistic. Of course, we've got a good ways to go. The election is still a little more than 2 years off, and so there's a good amount of time, but there's also a lot of work to do. And I sense that people in Louisiana are looking for a new direction, a moderate, centrist approach that isn't extreme in on either side of the political spectrum, but they're looking for a governor who will put Louisiana first, Louisiana small businesses, Louisiana seniors and Louisiana children and families and so forth, and stop going around the country and promoting self and promoting party. So I sense that there's a real opportunity. I think it's going to be a very competitive election cycle coming up in Louisiana in 2015.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on the air with Representative John Bell Edwards.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. I think it's pretty indicative that the Republican Party or the right wing of the conservative, really right wing party, represents its party and basically no one else. We have gridlock in Washington. We have the programs that the governor turned down that would have benefited a lot of Louisiana citizens based on ideology. It's kind of plain, you know, getting plainer and plainer that they're really not interested in governing. So, any thoughts on that?
Representative?
Yeah, well, you know, it seems that way to me too quite often, and there is a difference, I think, to some extent between my colleagues in the legislature and the governor himself, because Democrats, Republicans, and independents in good faith can work together in the legislature because nobody there is trying to position themselves to run nationally, and so they're worried about fixing problems in Louisiana and taking care of Louisiana's people. It becomes very hard, however, when the governor, I believe, is worried about his national image and trying to toe the line in a way that allows him to appeal to the primary voters in New Hampshire and South Carolina and the caucus voters in Iowa and that sort of thing, because you take a different approach to the issues. I think it leads you to not only reject the Medicaid expansion as part of the Affordable Care Act, but you don't even ask the federal government for a waiver so that you can tailor that program to maybe suit your needs here in Louisiana and be consistent with our values. I think it leads you to do some other things in terms of governing the people of Louisiana that aren't in our best interest. And sometimes it causes your priorities to be out of whack. You know, in the same year we have to veto $6 million, I say we have to, that the governor chose to veto $6 million for the disabled, we committed to build a new practice facility for the New Orleans Pelicans at $10 million to prevent these multi-million-dollar athletes from being inconvenienced by having to drive to the West Bank in order to practice. I just don't understand that sort of thing, and we need a governor who will set the overall direction for Louisiana and not allow those sorts of things to happen.
In response to the U.S. Supreme Court shooting down the Voting Rights Act last week, Governor Jindal says the court recognized that states can fairly design our own district maps and run our own elections without the federal government. What do you think will happen now in the legislature after this decision?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and I don't necessarily disagree with the governor on that. I think states can do it. It remains to be seen what states do, in fact, do as a result of this. And, of course, I'm most concerned about Louisiana. And we have a general session coming up next year in 2014, and we'll see what, if any, bills get introduced in order to change the election laws in Louisiana, whether they make it harder or easier for people to vote, whether they limit or increase the amount of early voting, whether they enhance the voter identification requirements and that sort of thing. So I agree with him that it's possible that states can do that. I just hope that he will lead the states in a way, this state in a way that makes sure that that happens.
Judy on I-10. Judy, you're on the air with Representative John Bell Edwards.
Good morning, gentlemen. Actually, something that I've noticed, in light of the fact that I'm not native to Louisiana, but this is my adoptive home, is that the problem you run into is that there are two Louisianas. There's South Louisiana, where I live, and then there's North Louisiana, which is almost completely different from the rest of the state. And I think Governor Kendall actually appeals to North Louisiana because the best way to put it is he's always there, if he's in state. And I'm also hoping that in the months and years to come, that as a state, we get our collective act together, because right now, I feel we're heading in the wrong direction. That's all I have to say.
All right. John, Bell, what do you think?
Well, you know, as I travel the state, and especially when I'm in the northern part of the state, there are an awful lot of people who tell me that they think that the vast majority of the resources in the state get directed to folks in the southern part, especially New Orleans. But the truth is, I think now around two-thirds of the people live in the southern part of the state, whereas a couple of decades ago it was evenly distributed north and south. But it's going to take a real effort, a conscious and prolonged effort to try to make sure that we have a sense of unity in Louisiana, and that the folks in and around Shreveport understand that they too benefit when there's tourism in New Orleans that at a very robust level, and that we also need to have tourists coming into Shreveport, and that we all have something to gain in Louisiana when this happens. And that's, tourism is a relatively small example, but it's very important in Louisiana. But we can foster a sense of unity and oneness in Louisiana. It's just going to take a real effort. I do agree with Judy, however, that there's a real sense out there that Louisiana is moving in the wrong direction in a lot of areas with respect to education, not just K-12, but higher education especially. You know, the governor has reduced state general fund support to higher education by some 70% since 2008, and we're raising tuition on our kids, but it's not replacing those dollars, and we're just not being competitive with the rest of the country or the rest of the South in higher education. And we can't be the state we want to be if we continue in that direction. I think a lot of the decisions we're making with respect to health care are not in our best interest long term, and quite frankly, they're not going to be sustainable. You know, we spent 96% of the budgeted money to do 9 hospital privatization deals on just the first 3. And that tells you right there, we're not going to save money through this effort. But I'm afraid without the Affordable Care Act Medicaid expansion, we're not going to be able to pay for the deals that we're making over the long term either. So we've got a lot of work to do. It's going to take some serious hard work, but it can be done. I'm always optimistic that Louisiana's best days are ahead, just like I am with respect to the country as a whole.
297-5633, your number. We'll spend our final segment with State Representative John Bell Edwards back after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633 or 877-217-5757 or inkstershow@wrkf.org for State Representative John Bell Edwards, chair of the House Democratic Caucus, candidate for governor in 2015, graduate of a Meade High School where he was the valedictorian, went to West Point, and was a Dean's List graduate of the United States Military Academy, and also a graduate of the Paul M. A. Bear School of Law at Louisiana State University. Dorothy on Goodwood, you're on with Representative Edwards.
Good morning. I am a member of a progressive Democrat organization. Actually, I'm the chair of it. And I wanted to find out what your opinion would be as to reunite the Democrat Party and promote it.
Well, I'm 100% in favor of that. You know, the Democrats in Louisiana still enjoy a substantial registration advantage over Republicans, and of course we have a good many Democrats who haven't voted that way in the last couple of cycles, and that's the real challenge. And look, I hope that we can achieve something in Louisiana where it isn't just the Democrats who come home and start voting for Democratic candidates, but independents and some Republicans as well. And it's my belief that is certainly possible, because many people who have voted Republican in the last couple of cycles are getting a lot more extremism than they thought they were going to get. You've got school teachers and state workers and retirees and folks associated with higher education out there who are not at all happy with the policies that are being promoted by our current governor. And I sense that they want a real change in direction. That's something that can be offered by Democrats such as myself. But I think it's incumbent upon us to be very moderate, centrist-type Democrats, so not extreme in either direction, but just offer, pragmatic approach to governing. And that will appeal to people in Louisiana, especially if they sense that their needs are going to be put first and not the individual needs of the folks who are holding office.
Rancy on Millerville. Rancy, good morning. You're on with Representative Edwards.
Yes. Hello, Representative Edwards. I have a question regarding the vetoed sessions. Could you suggest how we could encourage our legislators to call for that important vetoed session?
Well, sure. I would encourage you to call your member of the State House of Representatives as well as the Senate, and let them know why you believe a veto override session is important. And you can also email them. You can encourage your friends and neighbors and family members to do the same. It's always important that legislators hear from their constituents, because we all try to make sure that our constituents are satisfied and happy with the service that we render. And so when we hear from our own constituents that they prefer, desire, expect an override session, it makes it at least a little harder not to support that, because you can believe they're going to be hearing from the administration and from the leadership. I'm talking about the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House, who are both on record now as opposing an override session. So these members had better hear from their constituents that they expect something different. So I would encourage you to be involved and make your views known.
A question from Ty. He inquires and asks of you, Representative Edwards, what do you make of the governor's 64 parish tour?
Well, I think it's always a good thing for the governor or any leader to make himself available. Hopefully these are going to be real town hall events where folks get to ask questions, and it will be a meaningful exercise as opposed to something that would be more of a dog and pony show where he delivers prepared remarks and then leaves. But I think it's always a good thing for the governor to make himself available, and quite frankly, he's been making himself available in other states for a long time now. And I'm happy to see that he's getting back to going around the state. And I hope that the people in the state of Louisiana will let him know that they don't support continued state general fund reductions to higher education, that they want a meaningful progress in K-12 and not the policies that he's been promoting with respect to vouchers to schools that are not accountable and that sort of thing. I think they ought to let him know that they expect their federal tax dollars to work for them in Louisiana, and that can't happen if we don't do the Medicaid expansion, but our tax dollars are going to go to other states and end up being used to reimburse hospitals and clinics and pharmacies in other states to care for their people, but not our own here in Louisiana. So, I think it's important that he do that. I just hope the people will show up and engage in a dialogue with him, and maybe the last couple of years of his governorship will be different and be better.
297-5633, if you'd like to get in our remaining moments with Representative John Bell Edwards, who is a candidate for governor. Governor Jindal cannot run for a third consecutive term. And there are those who believe that the 64 parish tour may be a prelude to him running for the U.S. Senate. That might make sense politically. What do you think of that prospect?
Well, I certainly think that's possible. I know that there was some discussion of that recently in response to John McGinnis's article that put forth that idea, and the governor's folks came out and just flatly rejected that he will be a candidate against Senator Landrieu next year. And I take the governor at his word on that.
There was only one person who did that, a guy named Kurt Anderson, who most people in Louisiana have never heard of. I don't know if Kurt Anderson speaks for the governor or not.
Well, again, that was the response that came, and the governor certainly didn't distance himself from the response. And it seems to be a pattern with the governor. But I have to assume that the governor is not going to be a candidate in the Senate race, although, you know, it's certainly a free country, and he can do that if that's what he chooses to do. I would tell you there's real peril in that for him because his popularity in this state right now is not exactly, where it was before, and there's absolutely no guarantee that he would defeat our senior senator. And while he might be looking for an exit from the governor's office, I don't think he's looking for a defeat.
Well, Louisiana senior senator is, of course, Mary Loretta Landrieu, elected three times, all close races for U.S. Senate, also elected twice statewide as treasurer of Louisiana. So people are accustomed to voting for her. But I think you would acknowledge, Representative Edwards, she has a tough fight next year, no matter who the candidate is on the other side.
No, you're right. But she's always had a tough fight, and she's always found a way to win. And the one thing I know about Mary is she is a fighter. And I'm not sure that our governor can withstand that right now because he's given her so much material with which to oppose him. And, if he does that, that's fine. But I tend to believe that that's not in the cards.
So you're saying that if he runs against her, he better put on his big boy pants.
Something like that. Something like that, yes, sir.
What do you make of all the attention nationally that Elbert Guillory is getting for becoming a Republican? He's becoming a darling among the national media. Last night he was with Sean Hannity. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I guess I'm happy for Senator Guillory that he's getting his moment. I've watched the YouTube version of his statement, and I will tell you, I'm not moved by it. He just parrots all of the talking points, most of which have no basis in reality. I'm not at all sure what his motivations are and that sort of thing. But I guess I'm happy for him personally. I don't see it changing, moving the needle here in Louisiana or anywhere else with respect to outreach to minorities.
Okay, here's a question from Shelley, and a good one. Do you like the open primary system that we have in the state?
I actually sort of do. I think it's good that everybody runs at one time, and if one candidate can get 50% plus one vote, they win. If not, the top two candidates face off in a runoff election. I don't see any reason to move away from that system. I know there's not support for it in the legislature, and quite honestly, very seldom do I have constituents who voice any concern about our system. So I actually kind of like it.
There might be a move to get rid of it again. It happened once in federal elections, and then we went back to the old way. Certainly, it will have an impact on the election for Senate next year and for governor the following year.
Well, that's right. But when you start trying to predict what the outcome will be if you change the system, it's always a guess. You say, well, if we keep the system we currently have, this might happen and that might happen, and we need to guard against that. So you change the system, and then you get something that's different than what you envisioned anyway. So I think most people in Louisiana are pretty well satisfied with the open primary system that we have. I just think we got to get back to a point where we have more competitive elections, and that's needs to happen regardless of whether we have a primary system or an open primary.
Charles Bush writes, if you receive a state pension, the federal government reduces your Social Security benefits by up to half because you receive a state of Louisiana pension. Most people don't find this out until they retire. If you were counting on your state pension along with Social Security to make ends meet, you're in for a rude awakening. Senators, he writes, Landrieu and Vitter don't seem interested in this, probably because it doesn't affect their pensions. What does Representative Edwards think?
Well, that is a real problem, and it's also why in Louisiana we have to have a pension system for our state employees that is somewhat generous, because our state employees are not going to have Social Security when they retire, nor will our school teachers. And so we spend a little more here on our pension system than some other states as a result of that. I do know that Louisiana is not alone. There is a minority of states out there that are positioned along with Louisiana with respect to this issue, and it's going to take an act of Congress to actually change that. I think that the bills get introduced on a regular basis, and they never move, and I suspect the reason is that the price tag is simply too high. But it would take an act of Congress at the federal level to actually change this, and I don't see that happening anytime soon based upon the history that we've had in this regard.
Were you surprised, Representative, that the governor did not change his position at all regarding Medicaid expansion?
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, he dug his heels in. He made his views on that quite well-known and very clearly did so. I also know that he's the chair of the Republican Governors Association, and so this is a national position that they have taken. I do think, however, that over the next several years that we're going to be forced to take the expansion, because the way we currently pay for the services rendered to our uninsured is going to be reduced by 75% by 2017. And so you've got to have a way to pay for the services. And if your DISH dollars are going to go away, if your UPL dollars are going to be reduced, then the only way the hospitals are going to know that they're going to be reimbursed is if the individuals who can qualify for a Medicaid card actually get the Medicaid card. And so I think we're going to be required to do it. I think we will do it. The problem is we're going to miss the best years, the 100% match rate years, while we wait to do it. And that's a real problem. And, you know, we're talking about 400,000 people in Louisiana, the vast majority of whom come from homes with wage earners. They just don't make enough to buy insurance, and their employers don't offer insurance. And so that's the people that we're talking about, is the working poor. And I just believe that we need to take advantage of federal programs, because we're not going to get a reduction in our tax bill. You know, when you fill out your 1040 form for the federal government, there's not going to be a box to check if your state didn't take the expansion, so you get some of your money back. That's not going to happen. And I think Louisiana needs the benefit of the tax dollars that it's paying to the federal government, especially when we know we're having a hard time making ends meet down here with respect to health care.
So if you were governor, you would have signed it?
I would have pushed for the expansion, and I would have taken it. You know, whether it would have been an expansion of the traditional Medicaid program, whether it would have been the expansion through the Bayou Health, which is the way we're doing Medicaid in Louisiana now, or whether it would have been some modified program such as they did in Arkansas, which I tend to favor, where they're going to take Medicaid dollars, but they're being approved by the federal government to buy private health insurance policies with those dollars. But we didn't even ask for a waiver in Louisiana. And I know that the governor said many times that there wasn't enough flexibility in the program. Well, we didn't even ask for any. And our neighbor to the north, Arkansas, did, and they got a program that they are happy with, or going to be happy with. And so I think we could have done the same in Louisiana, and I suspect we will in the next couple of years. And I think that's going to happen regardless of who our next governor is.
Well, we thank you for joining us on kind of a holiday, John Bell Edwards.
Thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you and your listeners, and I hope everyone had a wonderful 4th of July, and we'll have a safe weekend.
Well, we look forward to talking with you again soon, and best to you and your family, Representative John Bell Edwards.
Thanks, Jim.
Take care. See you soon. And that'll do it for this week. We'll be back Monday, same time, same place. Until then, for Kevin Gallagher, thank you for listening. Have a good rest of the weekend, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.